No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We have no guest today, so it's going to be a free-for-all discussion between me and Kath and my amigo Kathleen. Now, this is a little bit of a problem because Kathleen is usually wrong, but she has a hard time admitting that she's wrong. She's a cranky middle-aged woman.
Oh, and I'm usually right.
So please call in and help me. Before we go any further, let me introduce my lovely, albeit disagreeable co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Man, you know how to increase my blood pressure. Middle age, is that what you called me, middle age?
Yeah, oh, what are you going to live to be, like 140?
I don't know about you, but the new, like, mid-50s is the new mid-30s. So I don't know where I feel. I don't know where
you know
you're
who says
up.
That? Old people in their mid-50s.
Yeah. But yes, I'm actually, you know, it's sad to see that men have to, you know, kind of lie a little bit to kind of puff them up. But I'll go along with all the things that you said and try to make it good for you, a good show. And welcome to everybody who's listening to
us. That's our history, isn't it? You puffing me up. When the hell was the last time that happened?
A lot. Are you kidding me? I'm always talking good about you. When I sometimes know better, but
good.
You know,
somebody needs to talk good about me because most people are not talking good about me.
Well, it's because, you know, when you stand up for something and you don't bend to all the pressures, and I must admit, you know, I hate to admit it, but you are what a politician should be. You stand up for the right thing and you say what you think is right and you don't have a problem. Never have had a problem talking about things, and so, you know, that's what happens when you do the right thing and stand up for the right thing. You're not necessarily the most well-liked or the most popular guy on the block, but that is the way it goes.
That's true. And let me just say on that note that Congress is on recess, so there's no new news on DC statehood these days, so we'll get back to that next week. But I would like to report, and I've reported this in the past, that we have 5 new co-sponsors in the Senate in the last 5 weeks. So that's great. We're on the move, and I don't know. We're a long way from the finish line, but at least we're moving in the right direction, which just shows that sometimes it's better to be right than it is to be successful. Or wealthy. And that really is our first topic of the day, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Wealthy. Well, you know, I've been talking about this for a long time. I was laid off of my job. I've done little jobs to maintain things and worked for people in the summer just to be able to pay the bills. But in trying to find a really solid job that has benefits, and especially in the state of Arizona, which is a right-to-work state, which to me just means you have the right to become poor, because and Arizona is more of a retirement community. It's a snowbird type of thing. They haven't built an industry base, so there's really no growth here except service jobs, which So anyway, what I've seen been happening to me, I've seen it happening to so many people that it's scaring me. And, you know, I've talked about it a lot, the vanishing of the middle class. And, you know, how I kind of have a new phrase, which I got off of an article that I saw, which is the rising group of used to haves. You know, I used to be able to take my kids on vacation. I used to be able to send them to summer camps, or I used to be able to afford a new car instead of, you know, maybe every 10 years. I mean, there was a thing, you know, 3-4 years, you bought a new car, you put into your retirement. And that I'm seeing, for me especially, as I look at gas getting more expensive. And now when you take your car to get fixed, it's not like the old days where, you know, carburetor, simple mechanics. It's all computer-based, so you have to pay a fee to get the machine to figure out why your lights are going off, and that's $130 just to find out what's wrong. And it's like that in everything, whether it's the grocery store where, you know, you go get grapes and they're, what, $4.98 a pound?
Yeah.
You know, and just looking at things, you know, we have an expectation. We want to be able to have internet, a cell phone, a TV. But my God, cell phones, I mean, you know, most families are paying up to $120 to $300 for cell phone. And then you have the internet, and the basic is just, what, $75? And that's just basic stuff. It doesn't give you all those other things. And I think what's happening is the middle class's expectations now are becoming very hard to have the luxuries. You know, we no longer can afford the luxuries. And it's just the basic maintenance of our lives that is becoming more and more expensive. And I know we were talking about this article in the Washington Post about now somebody's, they're talking happy days, no more middle class families squeezed as expenses soar and wages stall.
Well, you know, I think one of the things, though, that's, you know, it's I think important that you brought up this thing about used to haves, because, you know, in addition to having a bad economy right now, which we certainly have, and we have this widespread thing. I mean, I know more people looking for jobs today than I've ever known in my entire life, including getting out of college, just starting out in the world. There's way more unemployment than I ever remember. But also, expectations have changed. I mean, how many families do we have that have two or three cars? When I was growing up, my family had a car. That was it. Everybody had the same car. It wasn't until,
right,
you know, I got older, you know, we had one color TV, we didn't even have a color TV. It was black and white, but we had one TV. We didn't have a TV in every room. So, I mean, that's part of it too, is that our expectations have gone up. And certainly in the 80s and 90s, you know, we did so much better, and especially for people like you and me, because I think that in the 80s and 90s, you know, when we were in our 30s and 40s, we were in our prime wage earning years too, which we're not anymore. You know, it's hard to find people that want to hire 60 year olds, which surprises me, because you would think that the experience that we have the life experience and the job experience would really count for something, but the work ethic, and you know,
shocking.
Yeah, I'm sorry. In that article that you were talking about, you know, the attitudes have changed so much that, you know, it's just been that was what was really striking to me about that article, that people who always felt that they were going to have a better life than their parents, which I think many of us had, and that our kids were going to have that better life, don't feel that way anymore. They feel like life's going to be harder for their kids. Going to be harder to get them through college. It's going to be harder to do all these things.
If you're like most middle-class families that might have two or three kids, just dealing with, you know, nowadays, if your kids are in high school or elementary school and you want them to be involved in some kind of sport or art or music, where once the schools had those programs, now you have to pay extra.
Right.
So if you want soccer, I pay $80 a month for him to coach, and then it's a fee of $180. And then, you know, if you have music lessons, if you got to rent the instrument, and you want to be able to give your children, make them a well-rounded type of individual. And that has to be where they get exposed to the arts and to music and to sports and all those things that were once kind of part of the whole education. And now you got to pay for that if you want that. And I guess, you know, I was thinking when I was reading this article about when you and I were growing up, like the 60s and the 70s, and realizing, you know, it was a lot simpler then yet, but it was, we got a lot more when we were going to school, and our parents didn't have to pay for all this extra stuff just to give us those experiences we've got them at school. So, you know, it's kind of that thing where, you know, where are we headed? And it, you know, again, with the education issues, we've talked a lot about education on the show, but the fact that these kids are not getting this kind of experience, you know. I remember after school in high school, we had a choices between theater, chess, the writing, the quill and scroll team, the debate team. There is nothing like that. It's almost disappearing in the high schools. And if they are, you have to pay for them. So we want to give our children a good education, but then we look at the college loans. I know my son just, you know, he wants to go to medical school, but he is frightened to death of the kind of debt he's going to incur when he finishes if he doesn't figure something out.
Well, let me just say that probably the scariest thing about that article that you refer to is that the people that were barely hanging on and were going from paycheck to paycheck were making $90,000 a year.
Exactly.
They were making $90,000 a year and going from paycheck to paycheck for all the things you because of all the things you were just talking about. And by the way, make no mistake out there, people in America, Kathleen Gomez never joined a chess club. I don't know what she was doing after school, but she wasn't playing chess.
I was on the theater. I was in the theater directing plays. But let me tell you this. You know, we're also talking, this article we were referring to is in the Washington Post, and it does refer to the Culpeper area, which is what, about 45 minutes outside of D.C.? It's in Virginia.
And it's a nice community. It's a nice upper middle class community. Yeah.
And the way, you know, when you read this article and you look at the family that they kind of highlighted in this article, you can see these people are not living, whether it was expression, high on the hog. They're just dealing from 1 month to 1 month, whether somebody needs glasses or needs braces or, you know, all that stuff. And what the article said that was interesting was that, you know, in most other countries, you don't have three TVs in your home. Everyone doesn't have a cell phone. But what's happening here is we have all those things, yet at the same time, any kind of health issue could bankrupt us. And that's what they're saying over in these other countries, like in Europe. They don't go bankrupt because of an illness that might hit the family. But then again, they don't have three TVs in their
home. Well, it's the number one reason for bankruptcies in America. Medical problems are the number one reason. And yet we all stand around and we rail against Obamacare. And you know what? Obamacare, I don't want to digress. It may not be perfect, but at least it's an attempt to straighten out a system that's broken. And this, our medical system in America is broken. And we need to face that reality. And if nothing else, Obamacare has put us on the track of trying to fix that out, those problems. And if you're out there and you have problems with Obamacare, or you want to make a comment on being a middle-class American, which was, you know, that was really the American dream, wasn't it, at one time, call us and let us know how you feel, because it's this family that was discussed in the article in the Post, the wife is saying what they need is $60,000 more a year. Mm-hmm. She needs $150,000 a year, she feels, to you know, for a family of four to feel comfortable in the middle of Virginia. And that's just, in my opinion, that's just crazy. How many people are out there with family incomes of $150,000 $1,000 a year? So that leaves so many people behind. And I just want to quote a couple of things, some statistics, which I found really, really hard to digest. One of them is that wages for millions of American workers, particularly those without college degrees, have flatlined. census figures show that median household incomes in 2012 was no higher than it was 25 years ago. I mean, that's amazing to me that it hasn't increased in 25 years. Men's median wages were lower in 2012 than they were in 1970 when I was in high school. I mean, that's just crazy. It's just crazy. And I mean, that's all relative to the amount of inflation and, you know, the devaluation of the dollar. Because, look, when I was in high school, before that, even when I was in junior high school, I pumped gas and I made $1.35 an hour, $1.35 an hour. And wages aren't staying consistent with those types of minimum wages. I mean, it's just crazy. Meanwhile, your friends, the Koch brothers, and my friends, the Walmart guys, are getting richer and richer. Well, she includes the Koch brothers, are getting richer and richer and richer every day. I mean, why don't we see this, America?
And I think, you know, I remember I've said this before. I hate to repeat myself, but I think it's a strong point. You know, when I moved to Douglas and there's a Walmart in Douglas, they're, of course, wiped out the downtown. It's right on the border of Mexico. And they literally don't have full-time employees there. And I don't know how they do this, but most of those employees are from El Prieto. They might have a visa or maybe they're citizens. They live in El Prieto because it's cheaper. And you go there and you see these people. I mean, that they don't have people full-time, so they don't have to pay them benefits. Do you know how many how many other small businesses would love to have that opportunity?
Right.
How many, you know, businesses would love to have that option to not have to pay benefits? Because believe me, their profits would increase. So, you know, to me, when I look at what Walmart has become, it's so far from what it started, which was a place where it was the what do you want to call it? It really highlighted American-made products. You know, that was their thing. You go in there, you're going to buy American-made products. I bet you'd be real hard-pressed to find anything made in America in that store now.
Well, and they don't care anymore. I mean,
they don't.
Yeah, Sam Walton, you know, he's long gone. And the corporate mentality has taken over. And the scary thing is that when we had our education friend on a few weeks ago, he's talking about the same mentality in schools, the same kind of corporate mentality taking over schools.
Dr. Miller. You're talking about Dr. Miller.
Thank you. And Dr. Miller, who's an eloquent spokesman on this particular subject, was talking about how the same corporate mentality that has brought us things like Walmart is now bringing us education. And that is really, really scary. So I don't know what the next step is, but I think, you know, we're certainly going to find ourselves moving closer to the kind of socialist society that we were just talking about, where you have socialized medicine, where you have a safety net for everybody, because it's going to be impossible to get along in America without that sort of thing.
I mean,
and if
America,
you don't want that, we need to change the paradigm.
Because America is a place, and I like this quote by this article, says America is a place where luxuries are cheap and necessities costly. A big screen TV costs much less than it does in Europe, but health care will sink you. Or, you know, or if, heaven forbid, if you own a home and you have to, your heater goes out or your roof needs to be fixed, that can be the end of you. And that's why sometimes you see so many homes that are in disarray because they can't afford to repair it. I mean, there used to be a time when, you know, you could save and it actually have something that showed for it. And when I think of the used to haves, I used to be able to contribute to my retirement fund. You know, it's funny because I told you this, that actually all my retirement money had taken a dive in 2008. I wasn't on top of it. It was like below. I hadn't put into it for 15 years. Maybe it was about, let's say, about $75,000, and it went down the tubes. I think I had minus $6,000 in it for, I don't know how you do that, but that happened in 2008. And I just literally walked away. I was in tears, and I didn't look at it until like this past November, Well, he had gone from minus six to 56,000, 57, 59, something like that, which I was shocked, you know? And I thought, okay, so that's something that does work in the United States. If you have the money, and most of the people who invest in Wall Street in the stock market are in a position that they have that extra money to spend and invest, you're going to make it okay.
Well, but you know, yeah.
If you don't, if you can't contribute to it, you know, you really, literally, if you don't have some savings in retirement for when you're getting older, are you really screwed?
Well, and it's funny because we complain about so much. We complain so often about the solvency of Social Security. But, yeah, what are people to do but rely on Social Security? And it's not much to rely on, mm-mm, I can tell you. And also the things that we pay for that we didn't used to pay for. Again, in that article, you know, they talk about a $300 a month cell phone bill that these people have for their family. Hey, our phone bill used to be $9 a month. We had a landline and that was it. You know, TV used to be free.
Yes.
It used to cost $120 a month. Now it's true. You had four stations. But
that's all you really needed when you think about it. That's really all you
know,
needed.
Yeah, we got along with Leave It to Beaver and F Troop and, you know, MASH and things
like that.
Oh,
my gosh.
I didn't have cable until I was, well, on my own. I mean, not through college or anything. We all just did fine without it. So, you know, that's another thing. We pay for a lot of things that we didn't used to pay for. And it's funny because they're always telling me how great, you know, the cable company and stuff is always telling me how much better it is, my life is, now that I have to pay $120 a month for cable and other stuff than when it was free. And I just don't see it. I kind of like
I remember when they broke up Ma Bell. Remember how they used to call it?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
it was
yeah.
actually, it was a gentleman from, was it Colorado, California? I think it was George. I forget his last name. Anyway, when they decided to break this up and make all these small companies, it was going to be so much cheaper for the middle class. And I remember going into apartment and putting in a phone line, and it cost me like three times more because all these small companies formed, and then they had to charge you more because they had to build their infrastructure and they had to build this when it was working just fine. I mean, maybe it was a monopoly, but everyone was able to get a phone. Now, you know, I broke my phone or it's not working. I'm waiting to get a new one. And it's amazing what I have to do about a cell phone. You know, okay, luckily I had insurance at Best Buy, but to get the phone, and then Verizon and I were having an argument over a bill, so they won't activate it until I decide to pay them when I know they're wrong. So, you know, we didn't have this thing. Where else? I was trying to think of a company that when you're not happy with their service, you still have to pay them. You know, I mean, remember the day when the customer, if they didn't like it, you could say, okay, I'm going to pay them this month and then I'm going to change to another company. But you get in these two-year contracts and it costs $500 to get out. I mean, I don't know any other business that gets that kind of options.
Well, you know, that's what we gave up, and we're partially responsible for this by shopping at Walmart, because I ran a little business for 25 years, and I never had a dissatisfied customer. I mean, that's probably an exaggeration. I probably had a few along the way, but, you know, but I hardly had any because I couldn't afford them. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if somebody came to me, even if they made a mistake very often and it wasn't my responsibility, I still took responsibility because I said to myself, you know what? If you annoy this guy, he'll never do business with you again. If you just
talk bad about you.
Right. And if you just say, you know what? This was your fault, but that's okay. I'm going to straighten it out for you. I'm going to help you. Then you become a hero. And this is a guy that he wants to use again. But that's something that we lose with small business. I'll just give you a quick example. Pat, my wife, had a car that had a terrible engine problem. And we took it to our mechanic, who usually took care of these things. And he told us that he couldn't take care of it because it required rebuilding the engine, which was beyond his capability. It was a Toyota. He said, but he had read an article where Toyota had this problem with many of their cars. And if you could prove that this problem, oil sludging, they called it, was the case, Toyota would fix it for free. Well, we took it to Toyota, and sure enough, it was oil sludging, and they did $3,000 work on the car for free. Well, you think I ever took my car back to another guy but that mechanic? He right. saved me $3,000. I always took my cars back to him. So, you know, that's something that small business does. Walmart could give a damn.
Right. You know. And I had the same instance with my Honda. My mechanic in Douglas, you know, he said, I think I read an article because my air conditioning went out on a trip to Mexico, if you can imagine, 2 o'clock, 105 degrees. And he says, well, Honda's had this problem. But, you know, I hadn't gotten a notice about this.
Right.
Or anything, but
neither
he had
we.
Read it. And so when I contacted him, sure enough, they didn't pay for the whole thing, but they paid for half of it. Yeah. So, you know, that is something that we lose when we deal with these corporate, you know, big mega companies. They're not going to give you the customer service that a small business does. And small businesses is the foundation for our middle class. I mean,
that's
you
right.
know, and I look at you, you know, you talk about the Walmart and you had a direct mail printing business. And, you know, kind of like you could get stuff, you know, now with the internet, you can print your own stuff. You can do your own brochures. You can almost do your own direct mail with some of these programs they have. But yet, you've cost yourself the kind of, when it doesn't come out as good as you thought it would, because nothing really ever does when you work it on the computer until you see it right there, you were the kind of guy who would go in and change the color or do whatever it took to make that person happy with what they have. So we've lost that kind of customer service and dealing with someone who's going to care and try to help you. That's going to be gone if America doesn't wake up. And if there's one thing, I mean, there's got to be a good chunk of middle America that feels the way we do, and we're going to have to start doing something about it, because it's going really rapidly, more than I think people think. You know, we could see things in the next 2 or 3 years where it's going to be hard to come back from if we don't do something now.
Well, I agree with that, and I think that we have to stand up and we have to hold politicians' feet to the fire. And when we buy all this nonsense that's out there, that you know, that we have to do things like support these right-wing people that make it easier and easier in corporate America to function. You know, when we bail out all the, you and I have had this discussion, and we're going to come back and talk after the break about a few of these things. But you know, when we loan money to the banks, the bankers who are robbing us blind for 10% of what we'll loan money to college students for, there's a problem. You know,
there is
a problem in the way we're doing business. And you know, when we look, how many of our fathers and grandfathers made it on things like the GI Bill, where, you know, they were put through college and they were given the skills they needed. And we, you know, we had a vibrant and growing middle class. I don't think we realize how much we're going to lose when we lose the middle class. I mean, it's going to be a disaster.
You know, this sounds very dramatic, but I think people are going to have a real eye-opening when they go to Brazil, when Brazil hosts not only the Summer Olympics, but also the World Cup, because that is a class where there is now no middle class. That's a country with no middle class.
Right.
The poor are so huge. I was talking to this one young couple, and they were talking about that, you know, everyone's trying to flee the United States because they will kidnap your daughter and keep her for, you know, however long it takes before you can, you know, give him a ransom. The people who have any money are hired guards to protect themselves from the masses of the poor. And that's, you know, it's a very scary thing. It's going to be very interesting. But I can see that happening in America, because you need a middle class to be able to keep the poor somewhat at bay from the rich people. I would think the rich people would understand this. You know, that if you have a middle class, it's kind of their, your blockage to the poor. If you just create a poor culture, they intend to, you know, revolt and have revolutions and kill people. So it just, if you study history, it doesn't make any sense to let the middle class go.
Well, and that's it. The most desperate person is the most dangerous person. When you have nothing left to lose, you know, we see it here in Washington all the time. We have kids killing each other over the most ridiculous things, over being disrespected or, you know, wanting a particular jacket or tennis shoes or whatever. But these guys have nothing to lose. They don't have anything to begin with. If you want to make people good citizens, if you want to make them productive, exactly what you're saying, you have to let them buy into the system. You've got to give them a piece of the system. If they've got nothing, then it just doesn't matter. And there are many countries that are like Brazil. And I hate to think that the United States is headed in that direction. We certainly see a wide gap here in Washington, where we are among the wealthiest people in America, and we are among the most educated people in the world. We have more people with graduate degrees in the District of Columbia than any other city in the world, but yet we have a 35% functional illiteracy rate, which means that a third of the people in the district can't even read the newspaper. And we have this incredible income disparity between people in Anacostia, where employment has gone from, thank God, it was above 30%, it's gone down to about 18%, but it's still twice as high as it is in the white neighborhoods and or the northwest neighborhoods of the city. And the achievement gap, which I want to talk about a little bit when we come back, is just amazing in the District of Columbia, that we have, you know, like 80% of, I think it is, fourth graders reading at grade level in the northwest sections of the city, or white, basically white kids. And then black kids in the fourth grade, only 7% are reading at grade level. And so, you know, yeah, and it's all woven together. But on an up note, Kathleen has picked the song.
We were going to have an upbeat discussion today. So I did pick a song that is really kind of fun and happy and optimistic.
Okay, so here we
go. And
that
is going to be "Shiny Happy People" by R.E.M.
Right. And we were shiny and happy in 1991 when they made this song. Now we're old and cranky, but we'll be back in a few minutes. Maybe this will inspire us. And we're back, and we hope that lifted your spirits a little bit. Shiny, happy people. But we're not so shiny. Well, we're still happy, but we're not so shiny anymore.
No.
And we want to talk about, now that we've talked about the middle class disappearing, let's talk about our friends at the Tea Party, who, in my humble opinion, are helping the middle class disappear, even though they think they're not. I found it very interesting that there was also an article in the paper that these guys have raised $37 million and they've only spent $7 million on candidates, which means they're spending $30 million on consultants and perpetuating themselves. And they're going to have a really hard time in the upcoming midterm elections, I believe, because there's a lot of candidates, Tea Party candidates, that are under fire right now and are not getting supported from the Tea Party.
That was the Sunlight Foundation, and then there's the Tea Party Patriot Citizens Fund, which did the same thing. $2 million on expenses such as fundraising, polling, and consultants. And I think the Tea Party Patriots, I think, what did it say? They've only actually, oh, they were talking about an individual candidate that is, they were going against Mitch McConnell, you know, who's a Republican, a top Senate Republican, and a good guy, I think, you know.
Majority leader.
I kind of like him sometimes, but they're supporting this Jenny Beth Martin, and they've only given $56,000 worth of mailers to her going against McConnell, and they've raised a lot more. But yet I think they pay their consultant. He gets like, I don't know how much money. But it was more than $56,000. And I think, you know, it's amazing. This article talks about the fact that probably, what is it, 5% or less of the money directly raised by some of these well-known groups like Tea Party Patriots, the Tea Party Express, and the Madison Project, 5% is spent on election-related activity. And the rest is spent on, I mean, some of their salaries were, what, $272,000?
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well, and, you know, we've always had the case where, first of all, let me just correct myself. Mitch McConnell is the minority leader in the Senate, of course, because the Democrats are in control. And Harry Reid is the majority leader. But we've always had this problem with consultants. Remember, we used to have a guy named Pat Caddell. And when Carter, when you and I worked for Carter, and when the election was over, we owed him, I think we owed him close to $1 million. And we always used to laugh, and that would be the joke. We would say, hey, we could have told Jimmy Carter he was going to lose for $500,000, right?
Right.
I mean, how hard was that to figure out? So there's always been consultants that are well paid in this field. But, I don't think people understand when they give $370 to a political action committee, that $70 is going to go to the candidate and $300 is going to go to support the people that are raising the money. I don't think people understand that. And I think there should be a law that where you're required to say how much you spend on when you, that, you know, there ought to be more regulation of PACs, and PACs ought to be required to disclose on their solicitations how much money goes to
candidates.
Yeah, because they do disclose it in public records. But how many of us go to the FEC and look at the records?
And it also costs money to get those. I mean, the key thing here is, unlike nonprofits, your nonprofits usually have they're governed by boards or a board of directors. But a PAC can be run by a single consultant. And although there's, you know, candidates have all these laws on how they're able to spend their campaign donations, you know, they're kind of pretty much prohibited from using it for personal use. But PACs and super PACs, they don't have any limitations on how they spend their funds.
Right.
So if they want to go in and tell some politician, you know, we'll get you a new house, you know, if you're going to do this. I mean, there's nothing to say that they can't do that.
Well, and this independent expenditure thing has just gotten out of control, too. You know, that we've had a mayor, our mayor has just gone down because there was a guy named Jeffrey Thompson who spent $3 million in elections in D.C., $670,000 he spent under the table. I think it was somewhere between $625,000 and $675,000 to help the mayor get elected. And you know what? It was illegal. But if he had disclosed it, there wouldn't have been a problem. You know, because you're allowed, these independent expenditure committees are allowed to spend as much as they want. And with the new Supreme Court ruling, I mean, yeah, the Koch brothers are going to be spending hundreds of millions. And, you know, every time there's a tax reduction or something that goes their way, they have enough invested in America that they make out on it. So it's a good investment for them.
Yeah, it is. And it's amazing how these guys have a lot of money. And that, you know, you know, what was the old expression? To make money, you have to have money. So when they have so much money, it's just, it's amazing how it grows and they can do this stuff. But, you know, I was looking at some of the what they pay these presidents of these, like the president of the Tea Party Patriots nonprofit arm gets $272,000. That was in 2012. $272,000. You know, you and I have worked on campaigns, and we've worked 24/7. And boy, man, we never made any kind of that money.
We made $272.
Exactly. That's if we were lucky. Yeah, and we had to split it.
And then we had to run to the bank to make sure the check didn't bounce.
Exactly. Yeah. So it amazes me that these people could do it. For instance, they were talking about a Georgia-based group, a super PAC, that of $7.4 million in the beginning of 2013 just spent only $184,500 on candidates. Three quarters of the spending, $5.5 million, was devoted to fundraising and direct mail. And you know direct mail. You did that as your career. And it is expensive, but I mean, do you feel that it should take that much money to do a direct mail campaign?
Well, I mean, it can take that much money to do a direct mail campaign, but it shouldn't be that much of your budget. You know, so when we put a campaign together for somebody, we don't spend 90% of your money on direct mail. I mean, that's just crazy. And so I guess this is what you and I should do, Kathleen. We should start a PAC. We should start
for the middle class. You know,
the middle class PAC.
There you go. It.
And then when people question us and they say, well, what are you doing for the middle class? We can say, well, we raised $1 million. So me and Kathleen are now back in the middle class. We've added two people to the middle class.
That's it.
Plus our kids. We've added a bunch of people in the middle class. That can be our strategy. What?
That's not a bad thought, because look at everybody. Every interest group, every big corporation has a PAC to promote their interest in Washington. And that's what happens. I mean, that's what's happened in the middle class. The rich always have lobbyists and firms and law firms, whatever, public relation firms, to help them keep their wealth and keep their status. And yet there's nothing like that for the middle class. I mean, maybe the middle class, we got to start figuring out something, because we need people. If that's what it's going to be, you've got to have lobbyists to promote your interest, because people won't do the right thing for the middle class. Unfortunately, maybe we need to think of some way in which we can do that, because I don't know. I'm trying to think of how do you get the middle class, people who are struggling just with day-to-day stuff and trying to get things done, how do you get them motivated and how do you get them organized so that if anybody needs to be saved, it's the middle class.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, it wouldn't be a bad idea. In fact, it'd be a great idea, especially if we paid each other $272,000 a year.
I would never do that. But it probably would need to be if we were in Washington, because the costs are so high.
Right. Well, I'd pay you that $722 to make working for Jimmy Carter. But you know, you're right. There should be somebody out there fighting for those things that keep the middle class vibrant. And I don't think there are a lot of people doing that. There are groups that fight for families. There are groups that fight for poor people. There are, you know, we need somebody fighting for America. And right. You know, that was one of the ideas when we put this show together, as you understand, that, you and I talked and we said we want to get out there and start telling the truth about what's going on, what we've seen in politics, and how there are good people there trying to do good things, but they tend to be corrupted. And so maybe that's a great idea. We'll have to think of a catchy.
We're gonna think of it. We'll let you all know at the next show what we've come about. And that kind of, you know, when you're talking about there are still a few good people in D.C. and all that. I mean, we were going to talk a little bit about Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's a big proponent for college students and reducing. She wants the college loan interest to be the same as what the federal government loans bankers money at, which is what was it, 1.4? Or no, it was 0.74. It was like 0.74% interest is what the government gives loans money to the banks oh my God, it doesn't make any sense. I just get crazy.
Yeah,
I can't understand
guys
it.
That live on the Upper West Side, you know, or
who
just bought
a $20 million apartment down in Soho.
Yeah.
You know, exactly.
Fixer-upper.
Yeah, a fixer-upper.
$20 million fixer-upper. While we're trying to, while this family of four on $90,000 a year can't make ends meet in Virginia.
Right.
There's Elizabeth Warren's just written a new book. You should go out and try to get a copy. It's called A Fighting Chance. Yeah. And, you know, that's really what we want, right? We want a fighting chance. And that's what you used to have. That's what America was. I mean, you and I, when we got out of college, that's what we were promised. We weren't promised a living. We weren't promised a particular job or station in life. We were just promised that if you worked hard and you got a decent education, you could go out and get a decent job and make something of yourself. And that was true. I don't know that it's true anymore.
Well, you know, it was left up to you, too. You know, you were responsible for your life. Right. And if you worked hard and everyone was given the tools, I mean, education was more had a fair kind of level playing field. Everyone pretty much got the same. I mean, I probably wasn't the best in Crown Heights or maybe in Compton and in L.A. But overall, compared to the way it is now, you know, everyone got the same kind of chance, same opportunity, the same tools to work with. And it created, you know, people like, you know, the ones who invented Google and Yahoo and, you know, Bill Gates and all this stuff. Those guys, that's what it gave. It gave them a fighting chance to become so rich now that Bill Gates can turn around and start deciding what our whole education system is going to be about, which is so scary that it's gone to that way. But Elizabeth Warren is a good, you know, she may be for a lot of people maybe too progressive. She wants with economics, but overall what she says in this book is that from her own experience as a teacher and a middle class, you know, background in Oklahoma, that she's scared and frightened of what she sees happening to the middle class and that it's basically, you know, just disappearing because there's nobody who's fighting for the middle class.
Well, and you know, this is a woman who's lived it. She was a lawyer. She worked out of the living room of her own house while she was raising her children. So she's lived the whole middle class thing in America and worked her way through it. And I just think she's an outstanding candidate. I don't know what's going to happen with Hillary Clinton. You know, certainly she didn't make it last time. And I don't know what she's going to do this time. As we all know, and let's give a shout out to her daughter, Chelsea, who is expecting her first child. And her and her husband, Mitzvinsky. I actually worked for his dad at one time. He was the head of the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania. And, of course, we both worked on Clinton stuff. You know, I first of all just want to say how much I admire this young woman, that she grew up in the spotlight and it was not easy for her in the White House, and that she's gone out and she's made her own way in the world and become a lawyer. And you know, so congratulations, Chelsea. I hope that you have a wonderful child who grows up to be a nice teenager. Kathleen and I are, you know, we got teenagers now. But I don't know what's going to happen, whether Mrs. Clinton will go for the nomination. But I think that Senator Warren is somebody that deserves a close look.
Well, the one big thing about her story, too, is that she never thought she would run for office, but, you know, she ended up doing it. But she talks about how this book is about her losing and learning and getting stronger along the way. And she had five big battles. I mean, she was somebody who kind of exposed all the bailouts and the fraud and in elections within, you know, corporate America, and it was a very hard fight. And she said she kept on. When she finished one, she started, and it would take sometimes 5-6 years. You know, she did a lot about trying to get the government to be more transparent on the bank bailout, while tangling with the big banks over dishonest mortgages. You know, while you know the poor middle class, you know, you sure couldn't for quite a while get a loan, all those things. But meanwhile, corporate America, even though they were failing and they were, you know, going bankrupt, they were still getting the bailouts. And you know, everyone I know said, geez, why don't you bail me out? Why doesn't the government bail me out of all my expenses, right? That would be great. Right. Why not do it for middle-class America instead of for these guys?
Right, because we made some bad choices along the way somehow, you know?
Right.
I mean, absolutely. Well, I think we're going to continue to plug Elizabeth Warren as time goes on, and we hope that people will find out more about her and look at some
Hopefully she'll come on our show. We better start.
Yeah,
we'll
have to ask her.
Yep.
But let's move on, since we're running out of time here, just on some of the wonderful news items for the week. Okay. The first, the good news is that we have two new saints in the Catholic Church.
Oh, we do? Who are they? And I'm a Catholic. Who
John,
are the new saints?
John, Pope John Paul.
All
And Pope John. They were both canonized, and they're both saints. And the Pope and the former Pope did Mass together. That's the first time in the history of the Catholic Church that that's ever been done. Two popes.
Wow, you're a better Catholic than me. So what, the Pope John?
Everybody's a better Catholic than you, but that's for another
show. That's a whole other story. I got good reasons for the way
that's
practice.
True.
But so it was Pope John Paul and then the Pope before him or something?
Yeah, Pope John.
Pope John and Pope John Paul.
Yeah.
And there, what, I thought you had to do miracles. I thought you had to do a miracle.
Well, they have miracles. They've gone through all that, you know? Some woman was cured of some terrible disease because she prayed to the Pope. And there was this big thing. And this woman in Chicago who you know, they gave her a few weeks left to live because she had so much cancer. And she prayed to Pope John Paul, and all these Polish people got together and they prayed to John Paul. And you know what? She got rid of all the cancer. No drugs or anything. She's cancer free. So, you know, that was her miracle. They went through all that. But I just think, I got to tell you, I think this new Pope has moved. I'm not a Catholic anymore, but I was raised a Catholic. And I think this new Pope has just moved the Catholic Church in the right direction. It was, in my humble opinion, a few centuries behind, but now it's catching up. So that's the good news for the week. The bad news for the week, this guy, Donald Sterling, owner of the LA Clippers, making racist comments. Don't you love this guy? First of all, I don't know how old he is, but
he's living your dream, where he has a wife who lets him have a mistress, right?
Yeah, a gorgeous young woman who's biracial to begin with, and she's drop dead gorgeous, and she's young enough to be his granddaughter.
Mexican and African American or something like that.
Mexican and African American. And she's, and of course she can't believe what this guy is saying. If you listen to the conversation, and she's like, she can't even wrap her mind around it, because she's saying to the guy, hey, I'm biracial. What's wrong with minorities? And he's saying, oh, there's nothing wrong with minorities, but I don't want you hanging out with them. I mean,
or promoting them, because she took the issue was that she took a picture with Michael
Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson.
A picture with Magic Johnson? Picture with Magic Johnson.
I put it on her Instagram, and he saw it, and he was mad because he didn't want her to be seen with black people, that she was promoting them. And then on this discussion, she talks, and he didn't want her to bring him to the games.
Right. A basketball game where he's making millions of dollars off the labor of African-American basketball.
And, they just did, I think they came out on, I don't know when their game was today or whatever, and they put their suits inside out so you wouldn't see the Clippers as protest. But how do you have a team that's probably majority African-American and then say you don't like African-Americans, you don't want them to come
don't
to your
team? Don't want them coming
to
the game.
Oh,
well, and especially a guy like Magic Johnson, who was not only one of the greatest basketball players, but he also has this reputation of just being a really wonderful
guy.
Yeah. So just what a jackass this guy is, and what a terrible thing to do to his own team as they go into the playoffs. Like, they don't have enough to worry about. And while we're on the subject, let me say that the Washington Wizards are up 3-1 against the Chicago Bulls in the Eastern playoffs in our first round of playoffs. So go Wizards. We love these guys. But what a terrible thing to do to them as they enter the playoffs to bring on all this controversy. And let's, of course, move on to the worst news of the week
for most women,
for Kathleen Gomez, and that is that George Clooney is off the market.
Well, who did he get engaged to?
I don't really got engaged to like a real woman, like
like you know, not a celebrity. Like
she was a lawyer. Yeah, she's a lawyer.
Oh, she's a young lawyer. She's like 30. Lawyer. Right, she's like 30 years. They're mid 30s. She's
mid-30s.
Right. I did read about her.
16 years younger than he is.
Well, so. You know, it's not bad. It's not a bad situation. But I'm glad he finally got kind of got normal.
I know what you're thinking. First, Senator Brown's off the market. Now. George Clooney. What's a girl to do?
I don't know either. I know. It's tough in America.
Wow.
But we're going to be, I can't believe it's been a year since we've been on the show, and we're going to be ready to start vamping it up. I know we said that, but we're going to have some big issues coming up. So we want to say thank you again to everyone who's listened to us and written to us and called in. And we hope we're just going to make this next coming year even better and help us. We want middle class. We want to save the middle class. So if you're out there listening to us, tune in next Sunday. And if you have any ideas or if there's any way we could form a critical mass in which maybe we could get something going because somebody's got to do it.
Yep, somebody's got to do it. Thank you, America. We'll talk to you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.